including the Marine and Coastal Management, or the MLRS, it has again achieved unqualified audit report and our other public entities. So as an environmental department, we think we will continue to do our best in terms of making sure that the spending is in line with the treasury guidelines and regulations. The challenges that we still have, we face in respect of the other cross-cutting areas relates to the implementation of a master systems plan. This was a result that we don't quite have enough resources to finance the implementation of the master systems plan, but also we have challenges in respect of the capacity of CETA, which is the state organ that is giving us the support for rolling out IT capacity and infrastructure within the programs of the department. And there are details to this that the DTG Corporate Affairs can talk to. Our vacancy rate is still quite high, what has tended to happen is that because we have critical and scarce skills shortage, there is a greater mobility within the department itself and even between the department and provinces. And we have been trying our level best to make sure that our vacancies are not high, but regardless, we still were sitting at around 20% last year. We have implemented a bursaries program to ensure that we have universities or training of people in the areas that are critical for the functioning of this department and our sector. And in respect of the disability representativity targets, we were still sitting at 1.4% instead of 2%. And this is an area where, again, professional mobility of people with disabilities that are already in the system has crippled our ability to retain and keep them within the organization. We have tried, we've been, even in terms of recruitment in the organization, we decided to designate posts to make sure that we meet the target. But as we get the people, we still lose them to other entities because of that mobility. Then coming to the business plan for 2009-10, honorable members, I'm starting with the rationale for the priorities that are reflected in our key performance areas in our strategic plan. They are linked to the medium-term strategic framework and also the State of the Nation address by the President. In respect of speeding up growth and transformation of the economy to create decent work and sustainable livelihoods, the department has got priorities that focus on green jobs in the areas of waste management, coastal management, and even in terms of the biodiversity management, and including subsistence fisheries opportunities, whilst we're struggling with policy imperatives, but this is still an area where there is still a potential for us to contribute to decent jobs. The sector transformation, the minister spoke to the game farming or the hunting industry transformation. We are still in consultation, and therefore that priority is going to be contributing to still additional jobs, including the fact that it is currently contributing to the economy quite significantly. Then in terms of massive program to build social and economic infrastructure, the work of our regulatory functions as the Department of Environmental Affairs, the environmental impact assessments and even development of environmental management frameworks is work that is going to contribute immensely to economic infrastructure, both in terms of the resilience of that economic infrastructure, because ours is to make sure that development is done in a sustainable manner, and we think that the work that we contribute there through our environmental impact management functions is quite enormous, and we are already implementing strategically important developments response plan in respect of, for instance, the electricity crisis. We have a mechanism that is not following the normal process and route of EIA processes without cutting corners, but we've got a dedicated team and dedicated capacity that then looks at speeding up processing of such applications. In respect of rural development, food security and land reform, the work that is linked to the resolution of land claims in protected areas in respect of post-settlement support is supposed to contribute to this. We have a framework that we have discussed with the Department of Land Affairs, and that framework is being explored with the National Treasury in respect of how best can we finance and support communities that after this settlement through the Restitution Act around protected areas. And climate change, the adaptation response plan, not just information, is also going to contribute to food security and rural development in as far as it provides information and early warning and giving people information about which areas are likely to be affected by weather disasters and how best can they respond to those areas, whether it's local government and citizens. In respect of fighting against crime, again, here the work of the environmental inspectors or enforcement work in respect of making sure that there's compliance with environmental laws, because in most instances there is a link between syndicates and also the persistence of environmental crimes. And if we can, we think that if we can have control over the environmental crimes, it should also contribute to this, our societal fight against crime in general. Cohesive and sustainable communities, the greening and cleaning of the environment is an area which would make a contribution towards that. The minister has spoken about cleanest townships and cleanest villages within municipalities. Support for community development through implementation or continued implementation of our poverty alleviation projects, and the other areas also reflect that we are then aligning with the medium-term strategic priorities of government in terms of the new mandate of government. I am going to then jump again to the next slide. It's education, health, and again, this is just to reflect the link between environmental management functions and the state of the health of the citizens. If we can minimize hazards from waste and even air quality, it also means that we are investing and minimizing expenditure in the public health system. So these areas, therefore, reflect that alignment in terms of the work of the department. Coming to the key objectives for the next slide, yeah, that's for the 2009-2010, we have six objectives. Promote conservation and sustainable utilization of the natural resources, protect and improve the quality and safety of the environment, facilitate an effective national mitigation and adaptation response to climate change, promote a global sustainable development agenda, facilitate transformation and job creation, and good corporate and cooperative governance. And now I'm coming to the programs and the key performance areas. Is outlined program on biodiversity and conservation We have sub-programs and the relevant key performance areas. And marine and coastal management, we're reflecting those. And I'm not going to take you in details, honorable members, because I still have to talk to progress. And then the next one is environmental quality and protection. And then the fourth one is sector services and international relations, which covers most of the cross-cutting areas, and then administrative administration and support areas in terms of corporate affairs. And again, the key performance areas, one of them reflects that we have to enable parliamentary oversight, which is what we are doing here today, ensuring quality stakeholder engagement, financial resourcing of the strategy, adequate human capital, risk management, affirmative procurement, standardizing business processes, ensuring an efficient and a pleasant working environment. And then coming to where I'm then talking to the strategic objectives, the key performance area, and the indicator, because these are the ways you are going to be able to track whether we are making progress in respect of what commitments we made in the strategic plan, honorable members. So the key performance indicators are those measures that we reflect, you can check in terms of our ability to deliver on the strategy of the department. And we have the target then for the 2009-10 column. So the first KPI relates to the CITES regulations, which is the Convention on International Trade and Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, national norms and standards for management of damage-causing animals, bioprospecting and benefit-sharing permit applications, and then the percentage elephant management plans that would be put in place during this year. Again, these are to enable us to then implement what we committed to do in respect of producing regulations. In respect of elephants, we're saying that no authority would therefore touch an elephant unless we have a management plan that's approved by the minister. And our target is reflected there. But if they all submit the management plans, we'll process them. But we're saying that as a target, we targeting 40% of those parks that or private game reserves that have elephants. If they are going to deal with elephants in any other fashion, they have to give us a management plan for us to approve. And again, as I'm saying this, we are also, you might be aware that we have the elephant norms and standards, and we can take you those in details if the honorable members so wish to understand the contents of the regulations. In respect of marine fisheries sectors, this is an area which would move to agriculture, but for now we still, I mean, our measure that we reflected in the strategic plan was the marine aquaculture research and regulatory and management framework that would be in place in making sure that marine aquaculture grows in a manner that does not impact negatively on the environment. And there is a target there to undertake environmental studies on sites that are identified for marine aquaculture growth. In respect of the key performance area on conserving and mitigating threats to biodiversity, we have targets that relate to national biodiversity framework implementation, the number of species with biodiversity management plans, for instance, the elephants, national strategy for any invasive species will have to be in place after the regulations have been promulgated. The land that must be included under conservation, what the target is, and the grassland, which is one of the biomes that is underrepresented. We are planning to nominate another site for proclamation as a World Heritage Site, within this financial year. In respect of building scientific base for effective management of natural resources, we have the targets, again, biosafety research program, desertification or drylands research program that we'll have to develop in this year, and also funding of the elephant research program through the ivory sale that took place last year, or the proceeds from the ivory sale, sorry. And then the keep KPA on strategic research presence in Antarctican islands. This is the work that we again undertake in partnership with the Department of Science and Technology. The SA Agalas, as we indicated, needs to be replaced, and we are now this year supposed to at least award the tender, and in the next 2 years the building program would have started. And we have a target for voyages that again undertaken to Antarctica. And then in respect of protecting and improving the quality and safety of the environment, our target relates to policy and legislative framework for environmental impact management, the Act, the regulations which were revised have been promulgated. However, the implementation of some of the sections also is linked to the MPRDA Amendment Act, which falls under mineral resources. We want to make sure that Section 24G applications are processed within service standards, and some of the pending or still outstanding Environmental Conservation Act EIA applications, whatever the remainder is, should be processed this year, and finalize EIA appeals within specified time frames. Again, honorable members, the next section still reflects the targets that relate to preventing potentially negative impact to the environment, and the number of environmental management frameworks. We are being more realistic. This year we're seeing one national and one provincial environmental management framework to be finalized, and at least six provincial environmental frameworks and one national environmental framework where we render assistance to provinces in respect of the development of those tools, and even the follow-up implementation plans that would have to ensue after we have the environmental management frameworks. In respect of the next area, which is compliance with environmental legislation, again here we just want to step up our ability to deal with environmental transgressions. Section 30 emergency incidents to be processed and finalized. At least we have a target of 90% in terms of the percentage. And then in respect of criminal investigations and dockets that are handed over for prosecution, we are targeting 12. And then we want to make sure that we have enforcement in respect of healthcare risk waste and asbestos regulation. That would have to be undertaken this year. We have one pilot inspection on asbestos and the national blitz in terms of Basel Convention. The number of inspectors to be trained, we want an additional 120 this year to be trained from above 900 that we've already trained to date. Sorry. In terms of improving atmospheric air quality, the number of ambient air quality monitoring stations, we wanting 12 to be added in terms of the providing information to our SACHI system, which is the information system, and then we want to further reduce the metros by another two to 25 that have got air quality that's below ambient air standards. In respect of the prevention of pollution or reducing pollution and waste, we want to make sure that the National Waste Management Strategy is developed, and we publish activities, an activity list that is linked to the strategy. Waste regulations also are being developed, and to also draft a model by law for municipalities to then to be able to undertake their responsibilities in respect of waste management. Implementation of the plastic asbestos and tire regulations. We have the phase one to be implemented in terms of the new act. That's our target for this year. And the guidelines will have to be in place this year. A number of waste management facilities to be applications that will have to be processed within time frames. Again, depending on how many we receive in terms of the applications, our target is 180 and 116 in respect of unpermitted waste disposal sites, and training of waste licensing officers in provinces. We have a target of at least 27. In respect of adaptation to climate change impacts, we hope to have a framework for biodiversity response plan for during this current financial year, and we hope to publish the national policy green paper by March 2010 for climate change, that's national climate change policy to be published before the end of the financial year. In respect of the mitigating the impacts of climate change, again, our priority pollutants identified and declared. We know in terms of the greenhouse gases that there is a number of greenhouse gases that we can monitor, but as a priority for us, carbon dioxide would be identified as a priority pollutant, and we then will continue to also provide information and update on our greenhouse gas inventory. In respect of sustainable development agenda, in terms of our international relations and engagements, we have targets for South African positions on various chapters, multilateral biodiversity, heritage and land agreements, on multilateral sustainable development and trade, chemicals and climate change agreements. As we approach Copenhagen this year, we hope that as a country we will have a particular influence in respect of the final outcome, and on other areas in terms of South-South-South-North agreements. They are targets that our international negotiators have in respect of what they should achieve, so that you don't say, honorable members, we are just flying overseas, we don't have any way of benchmarking our ability of whether we are making progress. And then in respect of the strategic objective number 5 on the environmental sector transformation, we have targets in respect of the learnerships for previously disadvantaged communities that should visit our at least 10 national parks. We're targeting 5,000 this year. We have a Kids and Parks program, People in Parks program, and we also have a number of targeted learners on environmental sector related learnerships, that we would want to make sure we expose and train. And in respect of the model for rationalizing of management of protected areas and World Heritage Sites, we have a regime which is quite decentralized, which does not necessarily help national standards. And we have agreed with provinces that we should undertake a feasibility study that would look at what would be the best model in terms of rationalizing management of protected areas and World Heritage Sites, both from an efficiency point of view and also even from a cost point benefit point of view. At times, there is really the economies of scale are not significant enough to have a management authority just for one site. And those are the things that will have to come out from that feasibility study. In respect of the implementation of poverty and job creation programs, we have targets for jobs and training and the use of SMEs. In respect of the availability of adequate human capital, we're targeting reducing our vacancies, whilst we are also aware that the department, as it was undergoing the split between tourism and environment, there are delays in respect of filling posts which are related to us first separating the two departments and processing the split of the departments before the target dates of October and November, but we are making progress. So as much as we do have those targets, we might have challenges in meeting those targets in light of the kind of, I would say, 3 months, 4 months delay that is linked to us splitting the two departments. And on employee relations, we would want to make sure that we process cases within time frames or within our standard defined time frames, and implementation of wellness, making sure that we also achieve our employment equity targets. As I indicated earlier on, that we've met the women targets and our black representativity targets, but we have been struggling with the disability target in respect of employment equity. And in respect of the working environment, we are still in a process of procuring a building with Treasury through a public partnership, and a culture change interventions are also in progress, both in respect of the split of the department, but also beyond that. And the other KPA relates to our alignment and cooperation with the public entities that fall under the department. We try and make sure that our public entities are in adherence with our governance framework and performance requirements. We have a governance framework that we developed as a department, indicating what we expect from the public entities and the time frames, and they have been operating within that, which is why then we would know whether they are meeting the targets that we set themselves, that they also set themselves through their boards. As a department, we also sign off on the strategic plan of each of the entities in respect of what priorities should be included in those strategic plans. In respect of service delivery, again here, we want to make sure that we update the state of the environment report. And this year we are going to finalize the indicator report, the second indicators report, and have an update of the state of the environment website based on that. Again, in that regard, our job as a department is to make sure that we do not lose the biodiversity, we do not lose our nature and all the other good things that go with it, and we're using a tool which is called a state of the environment report to give us a sense of what the state of play is and how what programs then should we encourage government overall, because again, in most instances, the implementation of those response actions is not necessarily a responsibility of the department. It's the responsibility of other departments and under other sector institutions. In terms of the financial resourcing of the departmental strategy, I've spoken to the issue of donor funds and what we negotiate internationally on a bilateral basis and also on a multilateral basis. This is an area which is shrinking in light of the international financial crisis. And as a country, we would have to make sure that from the fiscal there is more money that it comes to finance environmental functions across the spheres of government. And then lastly, I think I'm going to jump the rest of the targets again, because they just reflect what we have in the strategic plan, and go to the session that talks to the first quarter. We, in respect of performance, as a department, what we then do on a quarterly basis, we assess how far we are with the, in terms of performance against the strat plan and the business plan. So this is the assessment or our analysis of what we have, our performance looks like in the current quarter that just ended in June, and it outlines everything that I've already said in terms of the targets and the key performance areas. But we've got what we use as a balanced scorecard system, and we analyze from the balanced scorecard system and give color coding. So just at a glance, you are able to see whether we are making progress or we are behind. So the green is reflecting that we are on target. Yellow is work in progress. Red is off target. Blue means it's on hold. And then brown is where in areas where we would have information gaps. So honorable members, you can see that in the first strategic objective on conservation and sustainable utilization of natural resources, we are on target, and in some areas it's work in progress. And I will, the next page also, the next line, until we go to that one where you have a red, which shows that we have under improving the quality and safety of the environment, EIA applications, we have a problem with the percentage that's processed within prescribed time frames. And therefore, in the first quarter, we are able to then say what are the actions to make sure that we don't then fall behind behind the schedule. I have then an explanation that gives a sense of what are the why do we have those reds in this area, and they relate. Can you go to the HUP challenges? They relate there to the issue of the number of applications that were received instead of an anticipated number. The department was anticipating to handle about 200, but instead they had doubled the applications, and we're still working on a manual system to track the time frames. And we are implementing the National Environmental Administrative System, which we call NIS, which is supposed to be an automated system, but because of the challenges of the implementation of our master systems plan in respect of the CETA support that we depend on, we are behind schedule in respect of that. So if we were to have our systems running, on an electronic basis, it would make things easier at a press of the button to actually make sure that we do not then go astray with those targets and implement measures early enough. And in other areas, we have real short capacity in respect of permanent capacity, even where I was talking about the strategically important developments in respect of, for instance, the electricity applications as an electricity response plan. We make use of either consultants or short-term capacity that is financed in partnership with the Department of Public Enterprises and the state-owned entities that are involved with the project. And basically because of that, then we have been having temporary capacity. And once we have additional capacity as a department, we should be able to step up our ability to deal with this challenge. So I'm giving you a sense of the corrective measures that we are already have considered after analyzing our first quarter performance. Second quarter performance, we will do the same. And then third quarter, similarly. So you can then see, going on further to the marine and coastal management area, mostly there we are on target on the first quarter, and we are also making progress, except in one area there where we have the percentage completion on the new Marion Island base, which is the area where we have had cost overruns and delays in terms of project plan because of the challenge that we have in the work that we undertake together with the Department of Public Works. And we can also see there in respect of that our corrective measure is to amend the target, but again, this is not quite within the control of the department. We still have to continue working with Public Works and making sure that we finish that project plan as per this initial construction schedule. In respect of the culture change plan, we have challenges in respect of focusing on the quarter one was to keep staff informed about government restructuring process, and now we have to roll out and provide workshops on the culture audit results to all employees. Again, this is an area which was on hold, but now we are going to continue with it in terms of the second quarter going forward. In respect of international cooperation, we don't have things behind schedule. In terms of the chief operations officer, the cross-cutting areas of job creation, we are not on target because, again, in respect of the restructuring process, there are new projects that must still be approved, and that process is only going to start now. We did not start them earlier because until we have split the two departments, then the ministers can therefore apply the processes respectively for tourism and separately also for environment. The next one is on the stakeholder engagement plan. Again, we have not been able to even meet our stakeholders this year, just to take them on board in terms of our normal practice work. We have a standard. The DG meets, for instance, NGOs in the environment sector two times a year, and I have not had one meeting because of time pressures in this year. So those are the areas which we have to find ways of catching up on in the second quarter and third quarter. NIS development, again, it's related to that integrated system with CETA, which we still have a challenge on corporate affairs challenges. The new DIT building, we still have outstanding issues because we wanted the ministers to decide. Initially, the building was meant for Department of Environment and Tourism, and now the specifications would change because we've got two separate departments. And firstly, the minister had to confirm whether we could then have the campus that is to be built to be shared by the two departments, even if they are two separate ministries, or not. And the second was then whether then the work can proceed. And Treasury had given us time to then finalize those, and the minister of Tourism and Deputy Minister of Tourism have agreed, the Minister of Environment and Deputy Minister of Environment will confirm today, because this is the only time we're making a presentation on the final schedule to them this afternoon. So those are the areas where we've had delays because we could not continue as initially planned. And I've already spoken about the culture change and the national environmental system progress in respect of delivery by the CETA. In summary then, honorable members, you can see then in terms of work percentage achievement, percentage work in progress, percentage of work that's off target and what's on hold, and we don't have areas where we did not provide information in respect of our key performance areas that are reflected on the strategic plan. So this is therefore the progress of the first quarter. That's mainly what we wanted to also share with you. And then in respect of mechanisms for monitoring and evaluation in the department, as I indicated, quarterly per program we have reporting, and that reporting is handled by using a balanced scorecard approach to our overall performance management, and we look at both the internal business processes linked to the delivery of the mandate of the department. We have, in terms of staff, everybody has got a performance agreement, and then we also go to the detailed staff level. Every quarter, we have informal assessments, and biannually, we have formal assessments. And then at the end of the financial year, we then do performance reviews, and basically, that those reports also get tabled in ministers' quarterly meeting, and today we are discussing again with the minister the last quarter, reviewing our performance with the minister. So, in essence, that's what that's the system that we have, and also in terms of finances, we do deal with the same system in terms of financial management. Quarterly, we do the assessment and see what's out of killed and deal with those in terms of our actions, and we submit the reports quarterly also to Treasury in line with the ENE, which is the Economic Classification Document of the National Treasury. I then have the budget quickly on the finances.
Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a long presentation. I'm at your disposal, because there is an arrangement that you need to drink tea and have some refreshment. So if you feel we can continue with the finances before we grab those pieces of bread and tea, well, what's your take? Finish the presentation. The tea is ready.
Okay.
And come back.
The lady is perfect.
Okay. Right. Shall we then adjourn for just
the capacity to spend the money that's allocated to us? Our trend has been 99.9%. And leaving us with a lean margin of safety for commitments, including unforeseen and unavoidable expenses that normally get attended to in the middle of the financial year by the Treasury committees. And in terms of that, then we are worried about risks that we have to think about, and we're planning for those risks currently. We do have a possible shortage of funding for the establishment, and in particular after the splitting of the departments, because as a department we were applying a ratio as given by Treasurer of 65 to 35. 65% is what will remain environment, 35% is going to tourism. So it's both going to create post vacancies, or you would have to forfeit other posts, because when the split is on a post level and even on budget level in respect of operations. So in and we are worried about our CAPEX plans, that inflation costs might not necessarily be well covered with the money that we currently have. And we have to continuously do reprioritization and budget trade-offs, which can have unplanned impacts on our outputs in respect of what's reflected in the in our business plan. And it does at times compromise our audit opinion integrity, because when you have a possible exposure of 99.9%. In terms of expenditure trends, you have very much less flexibility to deal with your commitments over the MTF period. So that those are the issues that we just raising there. And the next slide just shows then the split in terms of budget. Again, this is the trend since 2005 till 2009. And this split, this budget reflection is not taking into account the split of the two departments yet. We'll have the final figures once Treasury has actually suspended the amount that goes from our budget, that amount that goes to tourism. So for now, this is then the current allocation in respect of the split. Then the main areas that would be affected by that change is that program one administration, which is 143 this year, and then program six, which is sector services. So those are the two cross-cutting programs. The others are clear line. So the line ones won't be affected, but 143 and 937 might be different figures after the application of the split. The next slide just shows the graphical presentation of the growth of our budget over time, and then the allocations under program one. It shows how much for each sub program. The DG's office is 2 million something, and then the IT and up till the total of 142 million in respect of the budget allocation for this current financial year. In respect of the environmental quality and protection program, you can see regulatory services, what the budget is, impact management, pollution and waste, air quality, and then the 130 million is what we transfer to the weather services. And the Munisa Ibeg, which is the plastic bag Section 21 company. And then the next program is marine and coastal management. That's what is allocated to MCM. 198 is the MLRF. The rest is what we transfer from the department as a grant. So the total there is 570 million. The climate change mitigation and adaptation has got an allocation of 2 million for this year. Plus, we have donor funding from Danida, which is more around for the technical capacity for us to undertake the work there. It's about 5 million from the Danida funding. And then biodiversity and conservation sub programs, you can see there. And our entities, what gets in the department is management, biodiversity and heritage, and then transfrontier and protected areas budget line. Isimangaliso is one entity which gets 20.7 million. South African National Parks, 205 million. And South African National Biodiversity Institute, SANBI, which is 133 million. So we transfer to those three entities from that program. And then sector services is 937 million, which includes infrastructure, business performance, planning and coordination, social responsibility, and the Office of the Chief Operating Officer. And then lastly, monitoring and evaluation mechanisms, as I already spoken to this slide in terms of are submitting reports to Treasury and the Minister during every quarter. Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
Thank you, DG. But without maybe influencing the view of the Honourable Members here regarding this presentation, I think the meeting will allow me to say, yes, it has been an explicit and a very clear presentation. I think members won't struggle to engage the department on the issues that have been raised. Honourable Members, that's where we are. You are therefore free to ask questions, not unless DG, there is someone from your side who wants maybe to add or say something, because once the members take you head on, there will be no opportunity for one to strengthen your position. Now, if there is anyone who wants to say something before we hand over to members, our officials, you are free to do so.
I would suggest Fundi Isham Monde and Peter, just on CITES and Monde, clarify the issue of the three, is it the three not audit matters, and maybe Peter on the issue of capacity and EIA processing, or one other important issue also. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. On CITES, just quickly, you'll notice that DG, when he spoke of the progress.
Can you indicate if that one is on the actual presentation or is on finances, so that we know exactly where are you shooting at? But we cannot allow you to shoot in all directions. You're going to put us in more danger.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. No, it's on site, is Chairperson, in the presentation. But there's another area on alien invasive species. I'm just clarifying the use of the language. We have noticed over the couple of years that consultation in this sector is one thing that we must do thoroughly. Therefore, you'll notice that we will say this year we'll develop draft regulations. But you realize that once you say you'll have late regulations, by the end of the financial year, you still have a draft. Therefore, we have to split our processes. Therefore, the DG in the previous year, she mentioned draft CITES regulations as an achievement. But this year, we need to make sure that they are in place and they are implemented. Therefore, just for clarity before members start firing, Chair. Even with the AIF regulations, you will see that trend. We are saying we'll have a draft in place. Once we have that draft, the following year we'll make sure it's promulgated and implemented. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I counted the slides. For me, it's slide 22. There is an error there where we talk of the number of South African National Antarctica Program audit reports. It should not be audit reports, but partnerships. Thanks, Chair.
No further addition? Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and Honourable Members. Honourable Members would have noticed in the first presentation that against environmental quality and protection, there were a couple of red spots which were not on track, which, of course, we've never been proud of, but as the Chair said, this is the place to be completely honest about where we stand. In essence, when we talk about environmental impact management, which is the environmental impact assessment process, it's a very positive sign where we're getting far more applications than we expected, because it means that our economy is still reacting well and that there are developments. And most of the developments relate to the energy sector for obvious reasons around the energy crisis. As a result, we have a situation where we normally project the National Department to handle around 200 applications a year. This year we're dealing with 400 applications, which means that we either slow down those applications or we have to try and come up with a different plan, because the last thing we want to do is to actually reduce the quality of our assessments. So what is happening is that we're going to be looking at the transfer of funds from the operational budget into the personnel budget to beef up our staff capacity to deal with that backlog. And we thought it was important to bring it to your attention that this is the situation. The same applies to the aspect of enforcement. One of the things that, in terms of the direction that we've received from the Parliament, and specifically from this committee, is the need for proper compliance and enforcement. And in this area, we set quite ambitious targets for doing compliance monitoring and enforcement actions. But once again, we're sitting with a capacity constraints in terms of actually employing environmental management inspectors. It's a new, it's basically a relatively new area where you're combining policing with environmental expertise. And unfortunately, these kind of officials are like hen's teeth, so we've had to have an entire program of training, which you've seen through the EMI training. But there's a real need for the National Department to beef up its capacity to do enforcement as well. And therefore, that's one other reason we highlighted this chair, is that we're in the process of beefing this up, and for very good reason. It's because without proper compliance and enforcement, then the whole aspect of authorizations and regulatory control falls by the wayside. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, I have two issues that I'd just like to add on. The one is in relation to the red mark around the CETA issues. We've been having an extremely difficult time in terms of CETA's capacity to actually deliver on some of the systems that we require from them. Just to give honorable members an indication, a project that they were supposed to deliver on April last year, we gave them something like 10 extensions up to the beginning of this current financial year, and they still couldn't deliver. We then gave them an additional 3 months within which to deliver, and they still haven't delivered. So just to give an indication as to the challenges we're facing there, we are looking at a bit of an innovation in terms of the utilization of CETA services. But then again, we're constrained by, our budget. And then the second issue that I'd like to touch on, which the DG's already mentioned, is the split and the impact of the split on the department. Firstly, from a financial perspective, and secondly, from a human resources perspective. And I just want members, when they're considering this portfolio, to consider and always keep that in the back of their minds, because I think the DG's mentioned it, but the actual impact will only become evident once the actual split happens. Thank you, Chair. That's all I have to add.
Back to you, DG. So can you clearly declare that members must take you on? Head on. Declare publicly.
No, Chair, I don't want to be taken on. I want to be guided by the committee, Chair.
But a humble statement. Honorable members, the department is at your disposal. They need guidance. They need everything, including some shambok if there is a need. But because it's a women's month, this is a department led by women. All the DGs are women. The minister is a woman. The members, the majority of the honorable members in this committee are women. The chairperson is a woman. Hey, I mean, Mamundu, there is no way that we can climb on power, whereas people are putting more emphasis on their presence or justifying their being there. You are there as women. let's start with you, Honourable Member, and then Honourable Zikalala, Mama Zikalala is going to follow, followed by Honourable Skosana. Then Honourable Lovemore. I don't want to call you by your last names. You are all my mamas this month. Okay. Honourable Lovemore, then Mama Ndude will be the last one on this round. In that order. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the DG for a comprehensive presentation, as always. I have a number of questions. I'll ask a couple, and hopefully there will be a second opportunity. I've got quite a lot today. I've picked up various issues from the presentation. Some are directly related, and some are tangentially related. The first issue, you draw attention to Mapungubwe in the initial part of your presentation as a World Heritage Site. I'm very interested to know the department's opinion at the moment about the coal mining application adjacent to Mapungubwe by Coal of Africa, and what representations the department has made in this regard, because you know, as we know, Mapungubwe is an important archaeological site for the whole world, and a site of critical biodiversity. So that's the first question. The second question is on rhino poaching. I get the feeling that, certainly from media reports and replies to parliamentary questions, that there has been a massive increase in rhino poaching in recent months. More than 25 rhinos have been poached in the Kruger National Park this year alone. In the last 10 days, two I know of have been poached in KwaZulu-Natal, Natula-Tula Game Reserve, and also in Thaba Ingwe. And I would appreciate your comments on what is being done to stop this. Granted, it's partly policing and personnel and rangers and the like. I know that Dr. Mabunde has requested the SANDF to assist in the Kruger borders. I know that. But I'm interested to see how this relates to CITES. You know, it was the head of traffic in South Africa said last week that senior members of the Vietnamese government have been publicly quoted saying that rhino horn has cured them of terminal illnesses. And it's no secret that several of the people who've been caught in this regard in South Africa have been Vietnamese in recent weeks. I'd appreciate that. In related, Dr. Mayakisa, on CITES permits for abalone, I'd like a sort of clear answer on whether, in fact, the department is endorsing for export the abalone permits. I know that the minister is on record in a parliamentary question saying that in 2007 and 2008, the CITES permits were endorsed. It seems from stakeholders in this particular sector that they contest that view and say that, in fact, the endorsement has not happened, or at least at best has been very, very patchy. So could you give us an idea of whether that is happening? You'll agree that correct endorsement is critical in order to stop the outflow of illegally harvested abalone from our waters. In that regard, can we expect, based on scientific findings, and hope that they have happened by now because it's been promised before, any turfs or sectors within the abalone fishery to be opened in the next year? Honorary Fisheries Officers, Dr. Mayakisa. I never see anything about Honorary Fisheries Officers, despite it being a part of the Marine Living Resources Act. And an MCM does not have the capacity to police the whole shoreline. We know that. and there are many good citizens in South Africa, whether police who are, you know, off duty, people who work in disaster management, conservation officials, recreational users of the sea, who are more than prepared to assist the department in policing and enforcing compliance. And surely there should be a target, an annual target, for the training and recruitment of honorary fishery control officers to assist you in your work. Because at the moment, it is not evident from your plans that that is happening. One more question, Chair, and then I will stop for the moment. I have some concerns about the pelagic fishery, Dr. Mayakiso, pelagic fishery being anchovies and sardines. There seems to be a problem with regards to the announcement of the mid-year TACs. Now, these surveys are done in May or completed in May each year, and they are significant surveys, TAC recommendations running into, you know, in the region of 100,000, 150,000 tons increase for the mid-year fishing. And as you know, the terms, the time period that we can fish in is very, very small, and it's normally around about the 1st of July to the 31st of August. It happened last year, although the consequences weren't that high. There was a late announcement of the TAC. But as far as I'm concerned, as far as I'm aware, it hasn't happened this year. The TAC has been formally communicated to the industry. It has. It certainly only happened in the last few days. And the concern I have is that these are fast-moving fish that move out of our waters very, very, very quickly. And we need to catch within the TAC, whatever it is, as many of those fish as possible before the 31st of August, which is the end of that date for that TAC. It makes no sense if you can announce it on time, you give the industry the opportunity to maximize the catch, to land it, you can add your fees to it, we can tax it, we can export it, and the value chain is massive. There was a Minister of Fisheries many years ago who was famous for saying, if the TAC recommendation comes at 2 a.m. from the Scientific Working Group, phone me, and I will approve it there and then. The question is, why is it taking over a month into this fishery time to announce that particular TAC? And related to that, surely there is a possible amendment to the legislation here. Can it not be done in the department? Why does it have to be the responsibility of the minister? Is there a problem here with getting it from the Scientific Working Group to the MCM to the minister? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Oral Morgan. Mama Zigala.
Chairperson, when we were trained, what was it that we were doing when we opened the new dam? What do we call that in that industry? Yes, we were told that we don't call chairpersons chair. We were trained to say, chairperson, I'm helping the rest. Chairperson, I would like to thank the DG just to having made mention of the delays in the department, especially when it comes to tourism as a department. I was just wondering, because there's never been, a committee of this nature with tourism, and I was just worried, but now I do understand. Thank you very much. I will stop panicking. My question, I will direct my questions to the DG, but, well, the DDGs are there to give answers. I wonder, when it comes to air quality management, pollution and waste management, I wonder if there has been improvement when it comes to air pollution and waste. I will make mention of certain areas which were suffering the most. Durban South, affected by engine, refineries, benzene, that paper, what do they call it? Monday. having that school near Mondi, you know, having the communities there. And there was once a big fight. We were nearly killed when we visited Durban South because the community there wanted just to swallow us. I wonder if there has been an improvement. We went to Sasolburg in the Free State. There's a big township near that Sasolburg, Zamdela. Those people were sick. Right? Secunda as a plant, same applies. But now, it says improve air and atmospheric quality. I wonder if anything has been done. I would be very happy if I can be answered, because I keep on worrying. Each time I go past those refineries in Devon, I think of those communities. Number two, Gigi, we always say better life for all. You know, I like that slogan, better life for all. But you feel implementation of poverty alleviation and job creation. Those are the programs which include projects. Do they cover most of our communities, DG? I doubt. But I don't want to elaborate. Thirdly, I'm not going to deal with that one because Honorable Morgan has dealt with the Mapungubwe. I wanted you to tell us more about it. I'm not going to elaborate now. Maybe, DJ, you can kindly expand when it comes to rural development. How do you develop the rural areas when it comes to food and security? I'm worried because I'm very much in love with those people, those women who are still carrying water from the rivers. Those women who are busy carrying firewood from the bushes and forests, you know, such like things, but this is not the platform for that. Mine is just to know, how do you develop them so that if a question is posed to me, I'll be able to answer. Rural development. I'm very much in love with that one. So far, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mama Zepke. Honorable JJSK.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity just to make my input on what has been said and ask maybe one or two questions. Firstly, let me start by thanking Honorable Zegalala to speak on the behalf of my province, Secunda and other places that are affected by this issue of environment. Thank you very much. But I will cover almost the country by putting one bracket talking about rural areas. Chairperson, the DG has given us a very good presentation, and it is well understood. Now, what is important is that we must change this input into reality now. Must make it inside a success, and we must make sure that we implement it successfully. So, but Titi, as you have indicated, on the challenges under pollution and waste management, you put a target of 30% for reduction from 580 sites. That percentage, it was very little. But in the achievement also, you didn't achieve anything, according to me. If you put this number as a fraction, you didn't achieve anything. 2.5, it's very less. Now, you have put forth your reasons for the municipalities not to submit their applications. But as I'm looking to this paragraph again, for your expectation in the year 2009-2010, which is 116, I don't think you'll achieve this, because I don't hear any plan of encouraging these municipalities to submit their applications. And also, we must assist you as a department by saying, if you must come up with a policy that must compel all these municipalities to apply. Really, it's very important, because in the rural areas, we've got many legal dumping sites, and those dumping sites are not operating as expected in terms of the law of this country. It's a very difficult issue that you must address. Come up with a policy, encourage whoever, and if you've got a problem, come back to us as a committee so that we can assist. We've got the right to assist in terms of the law. We've got the right to assist in terms of calling the mayors to bring, in fact, to give us their problems of not submitting those documents to you. I should think, let's try something so that we can assist those poor communities in those rural areas. And also, the issue of disability. I should think your target is very little in the department, it's 2%. But you spoke about 1.4%. Even that little percentage, you did not achieve it. And you said in terms of, it's because of the shortage of resources. I should think we must also share ideas here and make sure that we implement this sector properly so that we can cover the policy of the government that we have set up as politicians, to say that sector, it must be represented. We must not have any excuses. The disability, women, and we say disability, women, and children, those sectors, they must be really addressed. And you have spoken about the fluctuations in the price of crude oil and exchange rates, and you said you don't have funds to implement some of your things there. But can I just ask, in terms of, has you ever been considered the funds, that funds, those funds from fines paid in respect of abalone poaching and sales of confiscated post-abalone be made available to the department for operational purposes? I should think those are the funds also that can maybe assist. Can we just get clarity? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Sir Jay. Honorable Lavo.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is almost precisely what has just been asked about the waste sites. I find it strange, and I just wanted some explanation of that, where there are, as you say, 580 municipal waste sites that are not permitted. And then later on, there are two sections here, and unfortunately the slides aren't numbered, and I didn't have time to count them. But in any case, number of waste management facilities, applications processed within legislated timeframes, 180, and then number of applications from unpermitted waste disposal sites processed, provided 116 or more are received, and the number there is 116. So the waste management facilities applications that 180 are going to be processed are those new ones that I just don't understand those figures, so that we can take that forward. And I agree entirely. The law makes it illegal, in fact, to operate without a permit. So why are we not soliciting these applications or actively going out and making sure that they happen, instead of, it appears from what's here that we're just waiting for them to come in. So I hope that we do actively solicit. I also just wanted to understand, again, I don't have a page number, but there's an indication of, this is in ensuring the KPIs to ensure compliance with environmental legislation. The KPI is the percentage of environmental quality protection related complaints, notices, and directives in relation to which reactive inspections will be conducted. And then there are two sections. It says 90% of all complaints and incidents received and 50% of all complaints and incidents. Why are there two? What's 90? What's 50? If you can just explain that, please. Excuse me, just over the page. I'd like to understand a little bit more, and I'm sure my colleagues would as well, about the lack of enforcement of legislation. It was noted that the EMIs, or capable EMIs, are scarce. You say that the target for 2009-2010 is to train an additional 120, which brings your number, if I remember, it's in the region of 900 odd across the country, which is quite substantial. It's approximately, I mean, if you just average it out, it's 100 per province, which is quite substantial. And with that kind of number of trained people out on the ground, you would expect that you would get very, very effective enforcement of our legal requirements. So I wonder if you could just explain a little bit more as to why we are struggling. And then lastly, in the financial presentation, the Bayisa eBag, this is a concern. I have previously raised written questions about this. I noticed that you've allocated 30 million. If the levy's gone up to 4 cents a bag, according to the ministerial response to one of the questions that we submitted, there are currently about 2 billion bags a year, which means that we are bringing in approximately 80 million a year on the bags. 50 million is going to buy eBags, so there's a shortfall somewhere of 50 million. Now, maybe it's up to National Treasury to explain that 50 million. But what I would like to, if you know the answer, that would be wonderful if you could provide it. I would also like to, though, ask about the efficacy of Bayisa eBag. We are told that that a lot is being done. When I read articles in magazines or in journals like Resource, for instance, or things from the Institute of Waste Management, it certainly doesn't seem as if a lot is being done other than making plans, having business plans in place and having people employed, but that not much is actually being done in terms of empowering people, in terms of making a difference in people's lives, in terms of making a difference to the environment, which is the ultimate goal. So if your views on the efficacy of Bayisa eBag, whether it should be retained, whether we should not, in fact, look at other NGOs linked to through perhaps the Institute of Waste Management to achieve what we want to achieve. Your views would be very welcome there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mama Lovemore.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm glad at least that we are doing something about the depleted fishing resources in South Africa, because it is a very worrying factor. But I can see that the department is starting to do something about that. I think I need to comment, that, Chairperson. I just want to say to what, Comrade Morgan, the member Morgan have just said in terms of the rhino poaching. I think it was also in the news. It's not only rhinos. I was very worried that in the Eastern Cape, there was even, something in the news or thing in the papers about some lions that were, if not cheetah, that were a rare species, and they were counting the number of them that we have remaining in South Africa, and that they were worried that they're also being hunted, down. And they were saying that we are losing because we won't be able. We are the only country in the world that actually have that species of that kind. I think it's a lion or cheetah, something like that. I think the department need to follow that up, because I was very worried when I sort of watched that, thing. I also need, also to comment in terms of the department's priorities, Chairperson, on environmental education. I think this is something that is long overdue, you know, in South Africa, because our people really, in general, need to be educated on the importance and the awareness of the environment. And I think I'm not sure. I just see, you know, this. It will be nice, actually, to have the time frames from the department on this, you know, program, and also maybe for them to be able to identify for us some pilot projects on this, because you'll find that many a times our people will build their shacks on the wrong areas, and when that you know the rains come, you know it becomes one of those hazardous areas, and you'll find that you look at the stream water in those areas where they've got a number of people staying in, and you see the damage that is being done in the environment, and that further down people will be collecting some water. So for me, you know, the issue of education and awareness is very, very serious and very critical, that the department must not just to say it's a priority, but it can be very important that if we can be able to be given some time frames and also some areas that they can use as pilot projects, so that they can be able to see that people now are beginning, and maybe you can even have some, you know, start having some, you know, some competitions around communities, you know, on these issues, so that you can, because I see here on your second page, again, of the priorities where you are talking about the greening and cleaning the environment, where you are talking about the cleanest township and the cleanest, you know, village. So, you know, for me, those then you can do by piloting. Actually, maybe, you know, identify areas where you can just pilot those, so that you focus on those, and then you can see, you know, the end results of how, you know, it will pan. Then you can be able then to say we are going to be rolling that out, you know, nationally. For me, that's very important, because our people, remember, the kind of education that they receive, environment was never in the curriculum, you know, at all. So for them, really, it's not something that is important. And I think if we are talking about climate change and what we are facing now in South Africa, I think the issue of environment education, it should go to all communities, so that it is not just the issue of few communities that understand and really appreciate, you know, our environment, and that you find that the majority of communities really do not appreciate because they were never educated about. That's very important, if the department can take that. The second issue for me on the issue of the greenhouse, you know, I want to know, you know, from the department as to how far have you gone with the greenhouse emission reductions, you know, for instance. I also want to understand from the department if there are any incentives and support that is given to the private sector on the issues of mitigation, actions that the private sector is taking, and also the state enterprises, and if there are incentives, what form those, you know, incentives are, you know, for instance. I also would, you know, like to understand from the department, is there any national framework on air quality management, for instance, if they can respond, you know, to that. And for me, the other question is the department doing anything to tackle the serious problem of air pollution? Because, again, South Africa is rated one of the highest, you know, countries in the world with air pollution. And again, for me, that's a cause for concern. And this now is sort of been, you know, going over years. So one wonders what the department is, you know, is actually been doing, and what is it doing, you know, on that to reduce, you know that, you know, if we can get the response on those questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members. Honourable members, honourable Bengu had to leave us because she's not feeling well. I hope that still be well. There's no point that we will have women who are not well. If they were not well yesterday, by the end of today, all of them are well. So by faith that one has, they will be well, including Mama Bingu and the chairperson. That's it from the members, DG. I think on my side, I'm not going to pose any questions because the members have actually covered a lot of ground. But on issues, maybe of generosity, I would appreciate if the department, even in the future, you ensure that there is quality in whatever you do or present. The documentation must be of quality because these are public documents. Because once we get hold and discuss these documents, they become public documents of which whatever which is being identified by our critics as government and parliament, we will be told that no, these people know nothing about what they are doing. How do they engage an unnumbered document carrying such an important information? That one, administratively and otherwise, we need to correct it. And as you are going to respond to these questions, please, okay, ma'am.
Chairperson, just to add on that, let alone that it's not numbered, the clipping is terrible. It's upside down, the other one is up, the other one is down, really and truly. It has been going on for some time. Please, just improve on that.
You know, I'm tempted now to stop there once and old mama, a mama of the caliber of Mama Zikalala, you don't have to say a thing. Otherwise, I will be spoiling the whole thing. You might not take it serious if I'm the last to speak on this. But please, you are a national department. You've got your sons and daughters at the lower levels that are looking upon you. So please, you know, it's an indication that, honorable members, something has not been done in terms of being prepared on the part of the department to come to us. When they were clipping these papers, you know, say we are going to a portfolio committee. I mean, I've been saying to officials, even at a constituency level, to those official LT district level, please, when you prepare for a presentation to a portfolio committee, don't regard that as an interrogation, as an investigation of the highest order. You must regard that as an opportunity for you to see and sit, exchange, share views with your masters, because that's where legislation is being passed, and your budgets. I mean, you must convince us, take us into your confidence. Don't be afraid of us. You don't need to do that. You must not shiver when you come into a portfolio committee. You must not. We don't have the responsibility as politicians to be animals towards officials. In terms of administrative correctness, gurus and scientists of public administration require a political administrative dichotomy. There should be an interface between yourselves and us. Please, this shivering thing, it must not happen. All of you DGs, you must speak. When a question has been posed in an area that you are specializing on, you must speak on it. The DG has made an overall presentation, But the semantics, the dynamics, the particulars should be coming from you. Because she was presenting a program of the entire department. I mean, that's what collectivism means. Collectiveness doesn't mean that we are all here. And then once Mama Zikalala speaks, that becomes a collective decision because only one person spoke on it and there was no contesting view. But it means you must come with your own view, you must come with your own presentation from your area, and then it becomes a specialization on the part of the leader, being the DG, to present a collective decision or a collective stance of the department. You will never have a problem. We must not cry foul when one of the directors or DPGs is not here, because whatever presentation that is being made, collectively, you are all responsible. If something goes wrong on finances, it's not a responsibility of the chief financial officer, but it's a responsibility of all the managers, including your HR, including your supply chain. All those people in that status, they are responsible collectively. You must not operate in silos. So I just wanted it's a word of wisdom. If you don't take my words, because the words that are coming from me are not coming from me directly, they are coming from somewhere. There's something that I believe in, and that has got an element of heartfulness. Please, we rely on you. The communities rely on you. These members have got nothing to say to the people if you are not doing a just service. Be honest, be open. Just tell us. As you are going to respond, please, you must respond in such a manner that an attachment of finances to what you are saying, you must put money where your mouth is. If that has not been catered for in your business plan, because we're talking this year's business plan, if it is not there, you must let us know that this is not going to happen because we did not cater for this. If you are able to review whatever aspect, you must tell us that this is what I'm going to do. Don't convince us to say, no, this is what we should have done and it has not yet happened, but it's in good hands. By the previous government. You were here 2 months ago. Umtumbuako is still in good hands. Superteval, you don't know who is pettering that Mzimbi. Yeah. So please, all of you, ladies and gentlemen, when you are responding to us, bring that culture of putting money where your mouth is. Then the other issue, the issue of unqualified, the unqualified report, yes, it is commended. It's unfortunate that the sustenance of that will be impossible in the light of what you have been allocated for. I think it's one thing that you must take note of, Mr. Chilek, because at a political level, something needs to be done. I mean, there is no way that we will pronounce in the State of the Nation address and the budget speech of the President, the Deputy President, and the Treasury. And Treasury was very explicit on the matter that relates to the economic recession. To say the economic recession does not necessitate the postponement of service delivery. That's what he said. That we must not postpone service delivery because of economic recession, because we'll be creating more backlog once this recession goes by, because it is going to pass. Then now when we get into that period of all of us to move as government, you won't move because there's going to be backlog. So it will be the end of our term where we will say at the end, no, it was because of the economic recession. It means there was no leadership provided. So it was written off by Treasury. He went further to say, you rather go out and borrow for service delivery. You can reprioritize your programs at a departmental level, but you must not ever postpone elements of the priorities that were pronounced and that you had as a department. If you do that, you must know that at the end of the financial year, these members will get into this meeting with the attitude that is not going to be very much promising to you, because you would have lied, you see, or you would have let them down, because it was said these particular issues must be dealt with, especially issues that affect the people on the ground, your projects, development projects, the better life for all, where the poorest of the poor is, where do you prioritize those people? The special programs unit, that includes your people with disabilities, your women, your youth. I mean, those issues cannot be postponed, Mama Zikalala. And also that the general policy of government says priority should be given to the previously marginalized communities. And those are the three sectors that should be prioritized. If in your department, ma'am, you are not prioritizing EE youths, no mama, and people with disabilities, say, Bwana Lendo, even if you are employing, you are not prioritizing abantu with disabilities. I don't know why. And it becomes a fact on the part of other departments. I'm not referring to you, to say, you know, this particular position doesn't need a person with a disability, which is not right. You should prioritize these people. You should prioritize women. You should prioritize young people. So with those words, I just wanted you to be brief and tell us that all these questions that have been asked by members do not justify your stance, but indicate that the correctness justifies these questions by saying, yes, you are true, because there is no financial provision in this business plan, so that we know very clear as members that there are these gaps that need to be closed. Then we will discuss at a committee level, members alone, to agree on certain issues to raise directly to the minister. You can lead us, KKDG, and deal with maybe overarching issues, or maybe allow your DDGs to assist. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Honorable Chair. And I accept, Honorable Members, that we will improve on the numbering of the document and the clipping. I must say that without making an excuse, I take myself and the management of the organization take the committee very seriously. Maybe the bit of shivering happens because, yes, we received the invitation. I think it's dated Tuesday, but we received it on Wednesday. And to collate the information within 2 days, and I mean, literally those 2 days I was not in the office, I was running meetings with provinces, and have the document delivered at least by Friday, so that members can have something to prepare on the basis of can be a determining factor in terms of how much can we really make the quality to be of a state that is required. I am not making an excuse, and I'm saying that the team will have to make sure that that does not happen again, for in terms of us presenting the work to the committee. It would be good to have the schedule of meetings up front so that we prepare for each session adequately and in time. And there you will not falter us. I'm certain Chair will give you the quality that we are really able to present as a department. But I apologize for that non-numbering and clicking and a few typos that are in the document as it is in front of you. I'm going to request the colleagues, as you said, Honorable Chair, we are a collective here. They will answer and I will add at the end when they've all responded. Starting with, let me just give you the sense of the questions. Muisa Ibeg, those questions on waste management, Nolwazi, and then quality, Peter. Nolwazi Peter, then Monde Fundi, and then Isham on disability. Okay.
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Honourable Members. Okay, I would like to start with the questions around permitting backlog and the numbers and just clarify the numbers there. The 30% target that you see on the slides, and when it talks about a 2.5% achievement, it is true that the explanation for the low number or the low achievement is that those applications, all 580 of them, are not sitting at DEET. So we don't have a pile of 580 applications sitting waiting for officials to look at them. We have to get municipalities to bring those applications in. Now, what is important to note is that the 2.5%, which translates to about 14 applications, that was processed internally, and the plan had been to procure the services of a service provider for that whole backlog, right? The procurement of that service provider did not happen on time. So the applications that came in had to be dealt with internally. And that is an addition and over and above the normal applications, the new applications. Okay. So that clarifies the 30% target, the 2.5% achievement. Then the other issue that was raised was the 116 applications, which is a target for this year. And the question was whether we were going to achieve that, seeing that we didn't achieve 2.5%. 116 sites is almost a third of the total backlog. I'm very happy to report to the members of this committee that, in fact, we have, in the first quarter, we have already achieved that target. Out of the 116 applications which are part of the 580, we have applications in DEET that have been brought in through the use of a service provider. The consultants went to the municipalities. They sat with the municipality officials. They compiled the applications. They brought them to DEET. We've got draft decisions or permits for 88 of those 116. The balance, which is 28, is sites that we discovered do not exist. So we've already met that target, Honorable Skosana. Now, I want to respond to the plea to put the money where our mouth is. What we've done in order to help municipalities bring the application in, we contracted a company whose job it is to go to the municipalities, get all of the information that we require in order for us to process the permits. We spent, that tender was about 4 million rand, and it's divided up into two phases. phase one was to deal with the smaller sites, which in fact comprise of the 116. So it's a transfer station. It's the smaller sites for which EIAs are not required. The balance of the 580 sites are the big sites, your big landfill sites. Now, those require EIA studies. Now, when we talk about EIA studies, we're talking about big money. And, of course, the biggest problem that municipalities face is that they don't have money for these EIAs. So that one of the things we have put in place to help municipalities is two things. One is that these consultants that we've contracted in are meant to sit with the municipalities and compile the MIG applications, the MIG applications, that would go to the DPLG, which is now the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. So, because there's a problem there. There's a problem in the way that municipalities compile those applications. So we've got the consultants that will help municipalities do that. That's the first thing. But that's phase two of the project. The second thing that we've done is that we have engaged COCTA, the Traditional Affairs Department, in two of the major projects this year. The one project is the Municipal Infrastructure Grant Review. They're busy with that process. It's been going on for a while now. And we've made input into that process in order that the waste management function at municipalities can receive the necessary funding, okay? The other thing, the other project that we've engaged with at COCTA is the Comprehensive Infrastructure Plan Project, where they have to make provision for all of the infrastructure across the country. Now, we've made input into that process. We've explained to COCTA what the infrastructure requirements are in terms of waste. When we did a census of the landfill sites that are unauthorized and what is going to be required in order to deal with the backlogs in terms of waste provision, it worked out to something like 5 billion rand. So now what we've done is we've communicated all of that to this MIG review a process as well as the comprehensive infrastructure plan in the same way that the other sector departments like water, housing, have also communicated the infrastructure requirements for their sectors. Okay, then the last thing just on the numbers was the 180 applications. Okay, I wanted to clarify that that is referring to new applications. Now, when it says we are going to, we're setting a target of 180 applications, that means new, completely new applications that come into to the department. Without that does not include the backlog, where we still have to go and dig, literally dig the applications from the municipalities. So I hope that deals with the permitting issues. Then the next issue is BUISA, and whether BUISA and what BUISA has done and whether they're efficient in what they're doing and what happens to the 50 million rand. The first thing I want to say is that, you know, when BUISA was set up, they spent a lot of time in getting themselves started. And what they've been doing is setting up a lot of these buyback centers. There were major problems in the way they did that. I think that when they started, they did not understand what it would take to set up these. There was a lot of time spent in setting up the buyback centers. There were issues with the purchasing of the land. There were issues with permits for these buyback centers. So there was a lot of time spent in that. However, they have procured so far about 8 buyback centers. They have given support in terms of infrastructure to about 12 of those buyback centers. WUISA is also very involved, chairperson, in they're working very closely at the moment with Gauteng Environment in terms of youth programs. They do a couple of awareness programs with youth in Gauteng. And WUISA has been involved together with 15,000 people in a lot of cleanup campaigns. We're talking about over 40 cleanup campaigns in the last a couple of years that have been done across the country. So there have been problems, and one of the things that we're doing at DEET is to interrogate two things. A, the strategic plan of Buyisa, as well as the business plan. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, we had written a letter where Buyisa submitted a business plan to DEET because DEET has, DEA has to approve the business plan. So we wrote a letter to them, and we're going to have a meeting shortly to basically improve on that business plan. Because one of the things that we believe is that they need to be focusing on more than just plastic bags in order to make an impact. So we are interacting with them on that. There is also, I would like to just add, there's also another matter which we are looking at, which is the board of WEIS. At the moment, the way that the board is constituted is slightly problematic. So we need to work with the current board and see how we can review the articles of association for WEIS to make sure that the board is properly constituted. We'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. In line with Honourable Sigalala, Honourable Chairperson, members. In response to Honourable Sigalala's questions about has there been any improvement in air quality and identified hotspots, the first one you brought up was Durban South, of course. Now, for members who have not been to this area, it's been an acknowledged air pollution area. And the reason for it is twofold. First of all, I mean, it's a high-density industrial area with a number of very large industrial industries, being two national refineries, a big paperworks, numerous small little chemical and downstream works as well. And the second factor, of course, is its geographical position. For members who have landed at the airport in Durban, this is the area. It's an area that is trapped behind what is called the Bluff, which is a large section of land between the sea and the inland area, which means that, in effect, that things behind the Bluff get trapped there because there's very limited air movement. It's made even worse by the fact that there's an international airport there, which means that the factories themselves can't have very high stacks because the International Aviation Authority says that they have to have certain stacks this high. So what has in effect happened? It's just a classic case of bad planning. Is you have huge industries stuck behind a geographical feature which stops wind movement, with the stacks pushed down because of an airport, and therefore the pollution gets trapped behind that bluff. And the levels of air pollution in that, what is often referred to as the South Durban Basin, have been terrible, absolutely terrible. And Honourable Sigalala, when you went to go and visit there, it was 2 or 3 years after it was initially pointed out as a hotspot area. Since then, there have been dramatic reductions, and specifically in volatile organic compounds. This is the benzenes and these all the nasty things from the petrochemical industry, and also from the petrochemical industry and from the paper and pulp industry, a massive reduction in sulfur. So we have a situation where the air is now coming within national norms and standards. And the levels of complaints from the community, you'll be happy to hear, have been reduced dramatically. There have also been stricter enforcements by the municipality, and it's an exceptionally important issue. The municipality itself is enforcing on ambient air quality, especially in cases where, for instance, the source of the pollution is easily identifiable. And many of these instances, because of the very high density of air quality monitoring equipment they have in the area, they can often point out exactly who the culprit is. For instance, the school that you were talking about is actually an air quality monitoring station in that school. And if, for instance, there's an increased amount of sulfur dioxide that is picked up, for instance, they immediately go along and look at the wind speed, and they can point out almost directly where the pollution is coming from. And in that regard, there have been two successful prosecutions when there's been an increase in ambient air quality. So in the South Durban Basin is a very good news story. Sasselburg and Secunda are good news stories, but not because of any environmental interventions. It's because, unfortunately, of the international financial crisis. The reductions in production and what have you have made major reductions in pollution, and specifically, pollution from the steel industries right across the river. Many of the production lines of a number of the companies there are actually out of production at the moment. And members who have driven through the Vaal Triangle in this particular part of the year, where you are so used to seeing this huge brown cloud, many members may have been surprised to see clear skies over that area. And I would hope that you'd think, well, you have a fantastic national air quality officer who's really got this in hand. The reality is that it's because they're not actually producing anything. However, that's a small excuse. Earlier this year, the minister published the Vaal Triangle Airshed Priority Area Management Plan, which is the specific plan to bring that whole particular area, which is Sasselburg, Vanderbijl Park, Vereeniging, and surrounds all the way up to basically southern Johannesburg, including Soweto and Meadowlands and Diepsloot and what have you. The plan for bringing that area into compliance is now published. And remember, this is a plan that has to be implemented by a multi-stakeholder team. So it's not just government officials. It's actually government officials, community representatives, and the affected industries themselves who are part of that implementation team working towards this. And within the next couple of years, I'm going to be very happy to report to you about what the intervention has made. And, of course, we have a whole monitoring network out there now, so we can actually measure it. I'm in an enviable position, unlike a lot of my colleagues, where I'm dealing with a substance that I can measure really easily. And the nice thing about, it's a double-edged sword, is that my particular area of focus, we actually have air quality monitoring equipment ourselves. Our eyes, our nose, and our mouth. So mine is probably the most transparent area of work. But with that said, I mean, I'm hoping that over time that I'll be able to report to you exactly about the measurable reductions in pollution that we've had in those areas. And then finally, the third one that you brought up was Secunda. And Secunda is also a situation that's also around a single industry, and it's interesting to see that we have the petrochemical industries represented here. Sasol, of course, is the major cause of pollution in Secunda. There is absolutely no doubt about it. And the pollution that we're really worried about in Secunda are volatile organic compounds. And VOCs are the nasties, the ones that you can't see. You can sometimes smell them, that very strong chemical petrol smell. They're nasty in the sense that some of them can cause cancer. And yeah, so that's an area that is really of concern for us. But you'll be happy to know that the whole high salt has now been declared a priority area, and the development of the priority area air quality management plan is underway right now. We'll be finalizing the baseline assessment, and I'd be privileged if you'd invite me to give you a presentation on exactly what the air quality situation in Mpumalanga is. And I'm hoping to give you, within the next 2 months, tell you exactly who's causing it, so what the problems are and who's causing it. And if you give me that invitation, I'd love to do that for you. Then in terms of the Honourable Lathmore, I'm going to quickly answer, if I can, the questions that you have around the enforcement aspects. First of all, around the number of EMIs. I mean, over 900 EMIs sounds very impressive, and it is impressive. The unfortunate fact is that around 700 of those are parks officials. So these are not green scorpions that are involved in pollution and waste. This is across the board. So a relatively small percentage of around 200-250 are specifically pollution and waste officials. The rest are basically the uniformed officials in parks. You have to be designated by as EMIs in order to implement the various biodiversity and conservation acts. So our challenge now lies in building up the capacity around the brown areas, the pollution and the waste and the air quality issues. And as you can see, we have a rollout strategy for that. The most important aspect now is to start empowering municipal officials, because the real enforcement takes place where the pollution happens. And it's not national departments, and it's not provincial departments. It's actually the municipalities that need to respond to this. And then with clarification of the actual numbers, looking through the actual strategic plan for the department, I've noticed that those two indicators are quite confusing, because they read exactly the same. It says 85% or 90% of all complaints and incidents received, and 50% of all complaints and incidents received, which sounds as if it's exactly the same indicator. I've just looked up now, and I see that the evidence of those, first of all, the higher number, the 90%, is around the actual investigation of complaints. And that is, the evidence of that is through the complaints and incident register. So in other words, if something is brought in, it has to be registered, and it has to be followed up to the complainant, either through a letter saying this is what we've done, or we've referred the matter to so on and so forth. The lower percentage, the 50%, is around incidents that are actually investigated, which means that it's actually a site visit. And the reason why it's lower is simply because of the capacity constraints I explained earlier. And as you'll see over time, that target increases as we increase our staffing. Then finally, in terms of Honourable Ndude's points around greenhouse gases, and this is really, really important for us. As you've seen, and the chairperson mentioned, we know we mustn't be embarrassed about talking about money. You'll see that our climate change budget is laughable at this stage, and hopefully will increase dramatically over time. In terms of greenhouse gas emission reductions, we must be quite clear about the jurisdiction and mandate of this particular department. In terms of the profile of greenhouse gases in South Africa, over 70%, almost reaching 80%, is due to energy. And it's due to our coal-fired power stations, what have you. And to a large extent, mitigation from that sector requires government policy around energy, which this department, of course, influences and tries to inform and what have you, but it's not within our mandate to do that work. And the other aspect, the next large sector of emissions is transport. And once again, although this department lobbies very strongly, and I can assure you that I am at my colleagues' doors, knocking on their doors continuously, our mandate within this department is around mitigation from waste, and my colleague will be working on policies, basically the development of our policy around how we actually start looking. It's a very small sector, but it's low-hanging fruit, and it's where we can actually turn a pollutant into a real source of energy. As you may know, the biggest greenhouse gas from the waste sector is from the landfills themselves, and it's the production of methane. Methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas, 21 times more powerful than carbon dioxide. So, but the nice thing is it's a fuel. So if you can capture the gas from these landfills and then turn it into electricity, you basically kill two birds with one stone. You add electricity supply at relatively low cost, and you reduce our greenhouse gas emissions very, very in a very, very strong and financial way. At the moment, Marion Hill is probably the best example of turning landfill gas into electricity, where you now have seven generators working on the Marion Hill landfill site that are extracting the gas from the landfill and turning it into electricity for the municipality. And this is also a very positive sign where suddenly municipalities are going back to the old thinking of, hang on a second, they too can generate electricity. There's been this kind of move that, for instance, electricity comes from the national utility. And so therefore, municipalities themselves have kind of distanced themselves from their real mitigation components. But of course, there's no reason why municipalities shouldn't start generating electricity, especially if they have the resources to do so. Then you asked around the incentives for this. I mean, there are a number of incentives, once again, not done by this department, but I'll point you in the right direction, hopefully. There are a number of incentives from Department of Energy. There are incentive schemes through Eskom as well in terms of retrofitting bad electrical motors. And these are all incentives to actually increase energy efficiency. Then you asked around the National Framework for Air Quality Management. I'm happy that you asked this because this is an important document. The national framework, I mean, one thing this department has done, which very few other departments do, is that in law, it becomes a law that the department produces an implementation plan for that law. We've often heard the situation is that we have fantastic law, but not very much implementation of it. Within much of the environmental legislation, certainly of the recent environmental legislation, the legislation includes that there has to be a plan of how you implement the act. And it certainly is in the biodiversity and conservation legislation, where they have to do this NBSAP and so on and so forth. With the air quality legislation, we have to produce the national framework, which is a five-year plan of how we want to implement it. And with the new Waste Act, we have exactly the same situation with the National Waste Strategy. So we're one of the few departments that, in law, have to produce the plans of how we implement the act. And I'm happy to say that we met our timetable. And the national framework had to be published by the minister at least 2 years after the act came into effect, and we published it exactly on the due date, which was September 11, 2007, and it's the 2007 National Framework. And if members haven't seen it, I mean, it should be available on the DEET website. But I think it's a really important document to look at because it's not just a dry implementation plan for an Air Quality Act. It's also sort of a kind of almost a beginner's guide to air quality governance. And we've had to write it like a textbook because in many instances, provinces and municipalities have not been doing anything about air quality for many, many years. So the national framework is actually, well, I find it exceptionally exciting reading. Not everybody else does, but I certainly do. So So that's out there and running. And then finally, on air pollution, on reduced emissions, one of the things that has been exceptionally difficult for us and for the nation as a whole, we're hoping that we'll be publishing the 2005 State of the Air Report. And you may ask the question, why do you want a State of the Air Report dating back to 2005? Well, the reality is that 2005 is when the new Act came into effect. And so what we have is we're going to be very courageous here. We're going to publish the baseline, what the air quality looked like when the new Act came into effect. Now, that's all very nice, but what it does is it basically provides yourselves and the South African public with a yardstick to measure the efficacy of that Act. Because we'll have the baseline numbers, and therefore we have to report against those numbers about are we really improving. And this is a published document. So people have said we're creating a rod for our back, but as far as I'm concerned, the transparency around the work that we do is exceptionally important. I mean, it talks to the Constitution directly. So hopefully by the end of this year as well, I'll also be able to give you an indication of a national pollution indicator, an index which then shows us nationally exactly where our air is going. Is it getting worse? Is it getting better?
Didi.
And so on and so forth.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Didi. This particular round that you are leading, its responses to the posed questions, please tell your DTCs not to give more and new presentations, you know, because once you say more, you tempt members to ask more, you see. Please respond to these questions now. If you want to share some information with us, you'll get that opportunity to add. Because at the end of the day, you'll end up not responding to the particular question. Because the members were very explicit on their questions. They said to the, what is happening at Zamdela? What is happening at Mpumalanga? You can add, maybe you can generalize that question to say in a number of areas. But don't get deeper and speak to other things, you know? But the information, we want the information, but the more you give us information, we want to engage you on that information.
Chairperson, thanks. I'll start with the questions by Honorable Morgan on CITES for abalone. The fact of the matter, Honorable Morgan, is that the department made a mistake in answering the question that you referred to. The question was with respect to endorsement of consignments. The department was answering a question thinking that it was about issuing of permits. The endorsement at South African ports of exit is usually done by customs, never by our department. So, brief, quickly, Chair, there was an error in the answer of that question. We have never endorsed CITES permits. Then, Honorable Morgan also asked whether there are tests that would be opened during the course of this year. The answer is we are not aware in the department of that. But what we are aware of, there is lobbying by the abalone rights holders for certain areas to be opened. But whether that will happen or not, I'm in no position to give an answer there. You also asked Honorable Morgan about honorary fishery control officers. Indeed, we've got 273 active honorary fishery officers who assist the 250 or so fishery control officers. You are absolutely correct. There is no intention to have an intake this year, because we had a biggish intake last year, and we're going to be focusing more on training and coaching those that have already been appointed. As far as the pelagic fishery is concerned, I have to agree with you. We have to process those TAC determinations quickly. My understanding is that even though we have the survey that happens in May, we still have to determine the shoaling behavior, whether there isn't too much mixing of anchovy and pilchards. That could be the cause of the delay, but I will go and check up where the documents are. why should it be the minister? And I think I have to agree with you that even if we send the TAC determinations to the minister, but the in-season ones, maybe they could be done more locally. In other words, at the department, not at the ministry. Honorable Skhosana, I was tempted, Chair, to give a long explanation here. But after your interventions, I will not do that. The question was whether the money coming from confiscated abalone could not be used for vessels. The answer is yes, it is. We do get the money into the Marine Living Resources Fund, and we then budget for it in the normal way. Unfortunately, Chair, whereas Peter finds it easy to measure, we have difficulties measuring it because of the hostility of the environment where we've got to measure, and it is extremely expensive, which is why DG has given an explanation that we are, even this year, going to need more money to operate the vessels. Chair, I think that's all for me.
Thank you, Chair. I will be brief to the point. Thanks for the words of wisdom. That shivering thing, you were right. It does happen. Chair, there were a couple of questions. One from Honorable Morgan on coal mining. With your permission, Chair, once I finish answering the questions relevant to me, I will ask Liz McCourt, my sister next to me, to respond to the mining that's her mandate. On the rhino poaching, Chair, yes, it's a big problem. As we speak, my latest information, this year alone, we have already lost 61 rhinos, which is a concern. Chair, I must say, you said it must be frank here. One main problem, this concurrence thing, I don't think is working, whereby the environmental mandate is sitting within the three spheres of government. We do spend most of our time, Chair, explaining to our colleagues in provinces what they need to do. Because an issue of enforcement on the ground is done by the provinces and our entities. We do develop guidelines, tools, frameworks to guide that process of them enforcing the law, but the lack of capacity. Although Chair Peter was saying there's a lack of EMIs in pollution, waste, and EIAs. But for me, I think in the last 5 years, the focus changed. Because we had a good track record in South Africa in enforcing the green agenda. I'm talking about poaching issues, removal of biodiversity from the landscape. Since there was an emphasis on EIAs and air quality and other stuff, I think most EMIs now are deployed to do that work. That's why now we're having a problem of poaching on the ground. Therefore, Chair, perhaps we need an army ourselves from head office that we can deploy to the provinces to deal with poaching. Even the syndicates that were arrested last year in December, that intelligence work was done by SANParks, not by the provinces. We report issues. We tell them that the syndicate will be in your province on this day in this park. We get the information beforehand, but they will come in and kill the rhinos and get out of the area. The things we did, we were trying to do at our level. Minister agreed to engage at a political level with the Minister of Mozambique because some of the problems, the syndicates are operating between Mozambique and South Africa. They kill in South Africa, but the selling point is in Mozambique. Minister agreed to engage the Minister of Mozambique. We will be also tabling the problem, Chair, to the Commission of Defense now in August between the two countries so that this thing can be taken up at that level. As you know, Chair, we put the moratorium on the selling of loose rhino horn because that's where our problem is, where people can just chop a horn and sell it loosely to the east. It is our big problem. We put that moratorium, but we want to continue with it. We have also developed the norms and standards for the handling and marking of the rhino horn. But they need to be marked, microchipped, so that we know the destination, we know who is the owner, we also know the landowner where that animal was handed from. say we are also establishing what you call investigators forum. The problem in this area, Chair, is a lack of intelligence at a provincial level. Therefore, we want to create that investigators forum so that we can be able to deal with the syndicates. Chair, the split that the DG has spoken about, we made some submissions of creating this structure at head office so that we can deploy the people in provinces. We have put that thing on hold because of want to finish the split first before we can build what we call our own capacity in head office in order to be able not to rely on provinces in terms of enforcement. We can deploy our own people. They can do the work on the ground. Chair, Honourable Morgan asked about the CITES. Chair, they just raised a concern. But I'm informed by our negotiators that they even congratulated us for the effort. I don't know what effort because we're still losing these animals. Traffic, Chair, it is a joint program of WWF and IUCN. They just monitor the trade in wildlife. That's all they do. And they report to CITES. In some of their reports, we always not head with them because they don't verify with us, with countries. They just say we have this information, they go and report internationally. They do operate within our country. Chair, DG looked at me on Masikalala's question on food security. Chair, if there was time, we can give a long lecture here, but there's no time for that. Because it is very difficult to explain the concept of ecosystem services. People, they'll ask, what are you talking about? Because we know biodiversity underpins most of the economic activities. Masikalala, by conserving the catchments, the wetlands, we are trying to provide that service of food security because we are also concerned about the rural livelihoods. We know rural people are dependent on firewood, are dependent on medicine, but the only thing we can do as a department is to conserve these ecosystems for people to be able to go in and harvest and benefit. Therefore, again, it's not an easy thing to explain just like that. It's acceptable. People are saying, we don't see water coming from the depth. What's the problem? They do not realize that the water comes from the mountain. We need to conserve the mountain in order to get water down the stream. On the rare species by Honorable Ndude, we will follow up on this one. But I must say, there are many rare species that we are losing on a daily basis because of many, many conflicting land uses, offer exploitation, and also the issue of smuggling of the species. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just in terms of the coal mining outside of Mapungubwe, Honourable Morgan, you would know that the mining, that the environmental management of mining falls outside the mandate of the Department of Environment. It is regulated and legislated through the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act. We, as a department, have two ways to participate in this process. The one is if the mining was actually proposed to take place inside the park, then the Protected Areas Act require that the permission of our minister is required in addition to the Minister of Mineral Resources permission. Unfortunately, this specific mining is 7 kilometers outside the park border. So the only legal instrument in our avail to participate in that process is to adhere to the requirements to consult with the Department of Environmental Affairs in terms of the Mineral Petroleum Resources Development Act. We have, to date, provided our comments, our concerns within the timeframes prescribed by that act, which include most recently an official objection to the granting of that permit, and we are currently still awaiting the referral of that objection to the what is known as the Regional Mine Development Environmental Committee, which is the process prescribed by that act. So, yes, the department has officially objected to the mining application, and we are waiting for feedback from that department.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson, just in terms of the clipping of the papers, it wasn't a deliberate thing on the part of the department. The reason why it's printed on both sides is that it's an attempt to actually save paper. So we've printed on both sides of the page. So that's the reason why they clipped in a specific manner. Then, Honourable Chairperson, in terms of Honourable Ndure's questions around education and awareness, just a few comments in terms of some of the things that are happening. There are several initiatives, both on the part of the department and also at the provincial level, and probably my colleagues can add as well, but I mean things like people in parks, children in parks, in terms of school curricula at a provincial level, and the introduction of environmental issues in the school curricula, it is happening. There's also departmental initiatives like the Cleanest Town Competition and the Greenest Town Competition. And in fact, the minister's focus has been precisely what the Honourable Ndure is referring to in terms of creating that awareness amongst the broader population of South Africa, and not only sort of people who have access to TVs and the internet and so forth. So the minister is acutely aware of that issue, and it's going to be one of our sort of pilot projects, funding obviously being an issue. But like I said, there is quite a bit happening in that regard, but we also feel that not enough is being done. Then in terms of the issues raised by Honourable Skosana and the Chair in relation to people with disabilities, I just want to make the point that that's an area that the department takes very, very, very seriously. Just to give an indication of what we've done, we've actually earmarked certain posts in the department that can, in fact, be filled by people with disabilities. Honourable members will appreciate that obviously you can't have a disabled person, for example, chasing abalone thieves. So there are certain posts for which they will not be suitable. But from a departmental perspective, we've actually identified posts in the department that can be filled with people with disabilities. Other things we've done as a department in terms of people with disabilities are looking at our buildings, access to our buildings, access to toilets. Our lifts actually talk to you, and so forth. So in terms of infrastructure, we've got evacuation chairs in cases of emergencies for people with disabilities and so forth. So it's an issue that we take extremely seriously. In the instance where we have hired disabled people onto our establishment, we've put in place measures to allow them, for example, blind people to read email and so forth. So it's an issue that we take extremely seriously. In terms of meeting that target, that's been a challenge for us as a department for a while now. And I think if you look at other departments, it's been a challenge across government. The reason being that it's also a scarce resource, having qualified people, disabled people that can actually do the job. They are very scarce in that sense, and they're very mobile because they are capable of actually doing certain jobs. They're very mobile, and everybody wants to meet their disability targets. Hence, you know, we have a problem retaining these people as well. Then, in terms of what the department's done, we've tried to partner with several stakeholder organizations that sort of specialize in disabled people and supply human resources from that perspective. But even with those initiatives, we're still having difficulty meeting those targets. And I can guarantee you that probably in the presidency as well, they're also having the same challenges. So it's something that we're constantly working on, but it is a challenge. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you. Just finally, in terms of the question by Honourable Skosana and Lovemore on the legal requirements for municipalities, I would say as the department we would encourage members of parliament strengthening our hand in terms of making sure that at a local government the environmental functions are attended to, whether it's waste management, both in terms of providing funding for them as well as creating the necessary consciousness, because it is a real a difficult situation, because from the where they can finance the function is only through that municipal infrastructure grant, and the 4% that remains, which is for street lighting and other activities, it then includes waste management, and they cannot finance it from that at all, from knowing what they need to do in respect of waste management, let alone the other environmental functions. Sorry. So your assistance then, if it's in a form of strengthening our cause in that regard, I would think it would be encouraged. And then the last question also from Honourable Member Love Moore on the Buyisa IBEG, 30 million versus 50 million. The allocation from Treasury has been 20 million. It's the first time that it's 30 million this year. And Treasury, in terms of collecting money in general, they don't necessarily give you what they collect. They don't ring-fence the funds and give them back to that department. And in fact, they are arguing that all departments are financed from the whatever gets generated from the fiscus or from the revenue that gets generated. If we were all going to say the money that gets collected by SARS must be spent by SARS, it would not do justice to government functions. So we don't necessarily have the leverage on that. And basically, we continue to motivate and hence the increase from 20 million to 30 million at least this year. And I would think, Honourable Chair, those were all the questions. We have answered all the questions that were asked. Thank you very much.
Deputy and your colleagues, Honourable Members, are you in agreement that they have responded to all the questions? Are there any follow-up questions? See, Mama Sigala.
There's one question which was not answered, and I don't know why, because I asked the question. I better life for all, then the DG knows what was the question about.
Honourable Members,
and also a question by Honourable Ndute regarding the environmental education. It was responded to, no? Oh, okay.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. I thought Mr. Mketeni answered your question, but maybe let me expand and say that the projects, yes, they do not cover all our communities, Honourable Member, and I think we can do better than before, but still the resources are the determining factor. So we will continue to have projects under the Social Responsibility Program that are more community-based natural resource management projects, whether it's for wetland rehabilitation or greening the areas in order to empower our communities on environmental on environmental-related functions, but also at the same time imparting skills and at least giving them some level of income. So that program will continue. We can always do better and we can improve. Thank you.
Lastly, on my side, the lady on my far left has alluded to a Department of Environmental Affairs. Which Department of Environmental Affairs?
Honourable Chair and Members, the restructuring ushered a Ministry of Water and Environmental Affairs, and under which there is a Department of Water Affairs and there is a Department of Environmental Affairs. So the process of that restructuring has created, Treasury has got a vote for Environmental Affairs and a vote for water affairs, and there will be two DGs in that sense under the same ministry, like we have had with the Department of Land Affairs and Agriculture and Land Affairs. We've always had one ministry there with two departments, one being Department of Land Affairs with a DG and a budget hold, and one being agriculture with a DG and a budget. So as this committee, you have two votes that you have to exercise oversight on. The one is the one for environmental affairs, and the other is water affairs. Yes.
I think this is the end of my era. It is not always very easy to part ways with your era. And I feel now an environment where I would become an ordinary person and not a chairperson. But without saying much, I want to thank you, all of you from the members and the officials of the department. But allow me, honorable members, to delegate this vote of thanks and closing remarks to be done by Mama Zikalala. I have got many reasons to say that, but I don't want to declare such reasons. Mama Zikalala, nawa bantwana bakho. They have worked, they did everything, they have shared information. Your colleagues as members have asked questions, and we have identified that there is passion on all of you to ensure that something happens in South Africa, something happens in this department. These new things seemingly are not going to take us wayward. We are focused, and we want to stay focused. Please tell us what to do.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I feel very much honored to be given this opportunity to say something. First of all, we've enjoyed you sitting on that chair for just these few hours. It was really good. We have really enjoyed. But now, we have had one of the best meetings today. And what I would like to say, the answers from the department really have helped us so much. We have learned so much. I remember when Fundi said something, I don't know, he said something, you know, before the committee does what, you know, something like, before the committee does this to us. Fundi, we are not watchdogs. We are just colleagues. We love you. There is nothing we can take to communities except meeting you, except getting some education from you. Of course, yes, we do disagree to agree. As the chairperson said, that at most times, you know, the department will just feel ukuthi asibakhohlise, you see, just to get away with it. And really, it does happen, of course, because now when you oversight, you go there, you find a different story, not the story that has been put across in this committee room. So guys, we love you. But today you excelled. Keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Thank you very much. You know, I like sitting and exchanging views in front of the elderly citizens.
because there is a lot that we are learning from them. I think it is really a blessing on my part to be part of this committee. You know the caliber of members that we have and the manner in which the department seems to be willing to give information and also appreciate whatever the members of the committee are saying in a manner that is appreciative, humbleness, and preparedness to correct. It humbles me. I only hope that you'll continue doing this, even if the chairperson of this committee is here or not. But if there is a structure that oversights you as a committee, please behave in the manner you are. Yes, we need to be treating us each other. We need to be treating each other as brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers. But at the end of the day, as a department, I want to repeat and fully concur with the senior citizen to say, we all love you. We will always be there for you. Please keep it up, the good work. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned up until tomorrow, where